Meet Nick Kumar, former private equity associate and New York City volunteer cop, current Columbia Business School MBA student. Welcome to the 287th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, except it's a podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result, you get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Today's podcast will certainly whet your appetite for a Columbia MBA. And the sponsor for today's podcast, our recent Get Accepted to Columbia Business School webinar, lays out exactly what you will need to do if you want to get in to CBS. If you missed the webinar, you can catch the recording by clicking on the link for the webinar in the show notes at www.accepted.com/287. Our guest today, Nick Kumar, earned his bachelor's at Cornell in industrial labor relations and economics. He joined the Bank of America as an analyst in 2010, moved into private equity in 2012, and became a Columbia Business School MBA student in 2017. While working on Wall Street, he also served as a volunteer auxiliary police officer for the NYPD. Nick, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thanks, Linda. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your background, you know, before you got to Cornell, where you grew up, and today, what do you like to do for fun?
Sure. So I grew up in the Dallas, Texas area, and by the time senior year of high school rolled around, decided that I did not want to be in Texas. So I went to the furthest place possible. For me, that was upstate New York. And so I went to Cornell University. I had a wonderful time there, really enjoyed the experience and kind of being away from a city and just meeting the people. And the many of those people I met are still my close friends to this day. After college, the allure of Wall Street was just too much to pass up. So I joined an investment banking program at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, where I was an analyst in the leveraged finance group for a couple years. During my time there, I really got interested in the investing aspect of the business, found a unique opportunity to join a smaller firm called Sound Harbor Partners, focused on distress and special situations investments. Did that for another couple of years. And then right before Columbia, I went to a larger firm called AEA Investors, based here in New York, where I was a member of their team for about 2.5 years. And that was my kind of path leading up to Columbia.
Okay. How did you get interested in becoming a volunteer police officer?
Yeah, you know, I think looking back, you know, myself and
I was
many
of part of the Texas Cowboy. I mean, I don't know, coming out or
you know, it started kind of when 9/11 happened, and I think everyone had different reactions to that. And then as I grew older, just seeing the number of terrorist incidents that were happening across the world, I hated being in a position where I couldn't do anything about that. You know, for a while, I thought about joining the military. You know, I was thinking about possibly doing West Point or trying to get into Annapolis. But as I learned a little bit more about what those positions would entail in the military, I quickly learned that I might not be the best fit. I might not be the guy who's best suited to leading a platoon, you know, in Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, in an intense and hostile environment. So, decided to pursue a more regular, if you will, a more regular career path, but always had that desire to do some sort of service. And when I found out about this program with the police department here in New York, I knew I wanted to be a part of it. It's a program that's kind of akin to the Army Reserves. So it's a reserve police unit, mostly operates during big events like New Year's Eve, big parades, you know, when we have foreign dignitaries visit New York, we're part of their security details. We also do regular patrol in different precincts. And you can get called up, but not, you don't get called up and deployed for 6 months. It's usually you get called up for a big event or you get called up on a weekend. So it was a nice way to kind of fulfill that desire to serve while also having a full-time career.
So if you're called up, it's like for 4 hours or 8 hours or something like that?
Exactly. It was a 12-hour-a-month commitment, so it wasn't too bad to balance.
What was the training like?
It was good. It was 16 weeks, about once a week at the police academy. And they trained us in self-defense, penal law, you know, how to interact with citizens, how to interact or react to terrorist incidents. So the training was really unique, and it was a little bit of a, it was kind of military style training. So it was very different than anything I'd ever done previously. And the one thing I remember from the training was that, you know, the people who were in training with me were from very different backgrounds. There were professors, there were students, there were mechanics. There were, you know, people who worked for the city in other departments. So it was just a, an amazing way to meet people that I normally wouldn't have the chance to meet. And I really appreciated that part of it.
Are you armed when you're working? As, or were working? I guess you're not doing it right now.
I'm not doing it anymore. We were not typically the first line of defense for a major incident. But we were armed with other equipment, and then we had a police baton and a radio and some other equipment. But, you know, our responsibility was really to observe and report any suspicious behavior, and crowd control was another one of our major functions.
What incident from your career as a cop stands out in your mind?
Yeah, you know, I think, New Year's Eve always stood out. I did that about for 4 years. I was in Times Square, and you have a million people packed into such a tight area. Things get very, very quickly. And, you know, my responsibility was always just to make sure, first and foremost, that nobody was acting suspiciously, because, of course, the greatest fear is that somebody tries to do something in one of those situations, but also just crowd control and making sure people are safe and there's no, you know, the crowd doesn't kind of spill over or jump over the barricade, and people don't start stampede or anything, because that can get very dangerous very quickly. And we came close a couple times to that happening, just because everybody wants to see the ball on New Year's Eve. And at the last second, they start pushing towards the center of Times Square, and you can have very dangerous situations, and there's young children there. So it was really our job to make sure that didn't happen.
Right. You know, I'm Jewish, and this is now, people can be listening to this later. It's the Friday after the synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh, and there's obviously a lot of concern about security, and there's no question that everybody right now is, in the Jewish community certainly, but I think in the general, the American community, has heightened awareness of personal security and their surroundings, et cetera. But obviously that only lasts so long.
Right. Absolutely.
For private citizens, that there is a push to get more training, but, you know, things do happen and they spiral out of control pretty fast. So it sounds to me like you provided a pretty important service to the citizens of New York. Now,
you know, one of the things I learned was, you know, one, you always have to be aware when you're out in the street, because things can happen at any moment. You know, there's no script. You don't know what's going to happen on your shift. So you always have to be aware and maintain that level of awareness for an extended period of time. And, you know, the other thing I did learn was that just the importance of, you know, being aware of your surroundings, being aware of things that can happen, especially in a big city. And that you constantly are a target of terrorists, and, you know, things can happen, and you just have to be aware of that and be ready to respond when things do happen.
Now, you must have been a child when 9/11 happened.
I was. I think I was. I was in middle school. So
yeah.
But it did have an effect on me. And, you know, unfortunately, as the years went on, and we had more and more incidents of these happening around the world.
Yes.
It was just frustrating to not be able to respond in some sort of way. So that kind of pushed me towards wanting to do this.
Fascinating. Let's get back to business school for a second. What did now? You have an undergraduate degree in business related fields, an extensive experience in investment banking and private equity. Other than the credential that the Columbia MBA is obviously going to give you, why do you need an MBA, or was that the sole reason you went back for it? And are you actually learning anything from your studies?
Yeah, you know, I'll say that the decision to go back, first of all, was not easy. I spent a lot of time thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I went back and forth over whether or not I was actually going to go back to school. So I spent a lot of time doing research, but mostly visiting with students, talking to them. Now, I was in New York, so visiting Columbia, visiting NYU, you know, visiting some of the other schools in the Northeast was easy. So I spent a lot of time doing that and just talking to students. And I spent a lot of time talking to people who were more senior than me, who I worked with, and asked them for their views and their thoughts. And kind of the takeaway I got was that, you know, business school is a different decision for everybody. And you will get out of it what you put into it. And, you know, of course, there is that ROI factor, and it is a major investment, both of time and financial investment. But I ultimately went back because I knew I wanted to be an investor long term. But I wanted to, I'd only done one type of investing my entire career. So I wanted to kind of get a broader perspective. I had never taken a marketing class. I had never taken an operations class. I had never taken classes on things like personal leadership, which I've been able to do at Columbia. And, you know, so far, it's completely changed the way I think about investing in companies. And I know that if I were to go back tomorrow and do the exact same job that I was doing before school, I would do it very differently. I would look at companies differently. I would ask different questions. I would think about my analysis a little differently, because we get trained to think in one particular way. And while that might be the correct way, there's always the opportunity to get an edge, to think of something that somebody else hasn't thought of. And while that seems kind of fluffy, it really changes the way you think and changes your perspective. And another thing that Columbia does particularly well is just how they integrate guest speakers into our curriculum. So I have a class, a security analysis class, where every single class we have a different guest speaker. And the people that I brought into the classroom are some of the top minds in the investing world, and not necessarily private equity investors, but they're hedge fund guys, they're guys in other asset classes. But just hearing them talk and having the opportunity to get inside their minds, I mean, they're willing to talk to students because they want to share, you know, share their wisdom and share their path. They wouldn't necessarily be willing to talk to someone who's currently in the workforce. So it's a very unique opportunity to be able to do that and to be in the same room with them, to ask them questions and to hear them talk about companies and how they think.
Right. And they, could you give an example of how your thinking has changed? Your perspective has changed?
Sure. So, you know, doing investment banking, you know, you get a very solid technical skill set.
Right.
And then, of course, in the private investment world, you look for certain things. You look for certain risks and certain highlights to formulate an investment thesis. But, you know, having no marketing experience, for example, I was never able to recognize when a company's marketing department was either overburdened, or whether they needed more people, whether their marketing strategy was effective or not. And having taken a number of marketing courses, I now know what to look for, or more importantly, what questions to ask. What questions when I meet with the CEO, when I meet with the CMO of a company. And it just, it enables me to kind of have a 360 degree view of a business, rather than having a more one dimensional view when looking at a company's risks and highlights.
Right. Yeah, that's very interesting. A few years ago, I was visiting London Business School, and I asked to meet with a student. I was introduced to a young man who also, I think he'd worked at BlackRock, or he'd had this incredible bank professional experience, much like yours, and also very dynamic, much like you, interesting fellow. And I asked him the same question I just asked you. Why did you need an MBA? And I don't mean the credential. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can understand the credential. And he said the same thing. He said, I'm looking at investments in a completely different way now. For all his training and all his experience, and he had, again, much like you, had excellent experience. He really felt he'd benefited. Maybe more in the second year than the first year. But the answers are so similar to me that it's striking. But yeah. You know, a lot of people coming, especially from investment banking and sometimes from management consulting, they say, you know, maybe they have the undergraduate business degree in particular, those people, and then they have this wonderful training and experience, and it is excellent. And the question is, why go back for an MBA? Am I actually going to learn anything? Right. And obviously ROI is a question too. And I guess that well, it remains to be determined a little bit for you because you're still in your second year. But it's a very valid question in my opinion. It's also the answer is though very interesting. Looking back on your MBA application process, what did you find most difficult about it?
Yeah, you know, I say first and foremost, going back to what I said earlier, was choosing whether or not to go. Was probably the biggest challenge in terms of whether or not do I even apply.
So what finally pushed you into saying, yes, I'm going to apply?
It was really talking to students and talking to people who had similar backgrounds to me who went and really benefited from it. And they talked about, you know, how it changed the way to look at companies. They talked about exactly what I experienced. And I said, you know, if I'm going to do it, I need to go do it now. I don't want to wait any longer.
Sure.
And, you know, I wanted to stay in New York. I wanted to be in finance long term. So Columbia was an easy choice. But in terms of the application itself, you know, a lot of my thinking and reflection had to come through in my essays and to make an argument as to why I wanted to go to business school and get an MBA, given I had prior business experience. And that took a lot of self-reflection. So I had to really sit down and hash out my reasons and hash out where I saw myself and how my path would be different with an MBA versus without having one. So the essays are really where I spent the vast majority of my time. And, you know, every school is different. Every school will ask. Some of the material you might be able to use for the same schools, but you really, you know, the one thing I would tell prospective applicants is really look at the school that you want to go to and really understand what they're asking you and then spend some time thinking about it because every school has different questions and you really need to think through your answers and do a lot of self-reflection as you answer them.
And the schools ask the questions because that's what they want to know.
Right. Exactly.
They want to know the answers to their questions.
Yeah.
What do you like best about Columbia's MBA program? What's you found most beneficial?
I think the one thing I found the most beneficial was just how they integrate. They really use New York to their advantage, and they really integrate guest speakers well into the classroom. So I have classes, you know, I talked about the charity analysis class. There's another class I'm taking in venture capital, and I don't know if I want to go that route, but just having guest speakers come in every single class from the VC industry and you know, people who have done it very, very well, and being able to hear firsthand and being taught by them, you know, about venture capital and what their experience has been and what they like and don't like and how they look at investments has been extremely valuable to kind of my personal development. So I've really enjoyed that part of it. The second aspect I like about Columbia is just my classmates and the fact that the student body is so diverse. And of course, being in New York, it's an easier sell, but the school does such a good job of comprising a class of people with very, very diverse backgrounds. You know, people from all over the world, people from nonprofits, the military, all different sectors of business. And for me, I've learned, you know, so much just from my classmates and hearing them talk in class and hearing their perspectives and how they approach problems. That has just kind of made me a much more well-rounded.
Okay. What do you think can be improved at Columbia Business School?
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing that everybody mentions about Columbia, and I'll echo it, is, you know, the facilities are definitely out of date, and it's a well-known problem.
They're dealing with it.
Sorry, say that again.
I say that they're trying to deal with it. They're building a new campus.
Yeah, and exactly. And I was going to say, but the school recognizes it, and they're dealing with it. They're trying to build a new campus, which won't be done for another several years. But they've also, you know, they've done a nice job of, you know, over the summer, I believe they renovated a number of classrooms to make them a lot nicer and more technologically advanced. and they've built out some space for MBA students to kind of meet and have group meetings and be able to do group projects together. But it is space constrained, and I'm hoping that the new campus kind of solves that problem. But it is probably the biggest area of improvement for the school, which they're well aware of.
Right. No, obviously they're investing millions in a new campus. And when is that? I don't remember. When is that supposed to be ready? 2020?
I believe 2021 is, I believe, when it's supposed to open. Yeah.
Okay. And just, you know, you touched on your classmates as being one of the things you like best. Do you find that there's like a real community at Columbia Business School? I mean, some students are very concerned that it's a commuter school. It's not a residential college. Mm-hmm. It's not in a college town. Obviously, you have all the distractions of New York City.
Right.
Have you found that to be an issue?
So I'll say I think the school does a very nice job of fostering a community environment. They have, you know, they allow for a number of they organize a number of events. You know, we have something called CBS Socials where the school comes together every Thursday or every Friday, you know, multiple times a month, and you can kind of meet and integrate with other members of the Columbia Business School community. They do a really nice job of organizing each class into clusters. Or, you know, some schools are called sections.
Right.
And within those, you have your learning team, which is a group of five or six other students. And those tend to end up being your closest friends. You take all your first year classes with them. But there's so many opportunities and chances to meet other students. And there's also so many after class events on campus. You know, they bring in people for presentations. They bring in a lot of alums to give talks and presentations. And through those, I've just met so many students from other clusters and even from other years. So, for example, just 2 days ago, we had something called the CBS Supper Club, which is when you basically you host a dinner for about eight other students. And none of the students know each other. So they just get all thrown into a hat. They draw out eight names. And then those are the students that you're hosting. And you all get together at one person's apartment and you have dinner together. And it's a really nice way to meet other students and to meet students in different clusters and also in the class. So I just met two new students in the class of 2020. So they do a really nice job of organizing events like that.
Great. Now, what you completed a couple of months ago, your summer internship. What did you do during your summer internship?
So I actually started in January. So I'm in Columbia's J-term class. So I didn't do the traditional summer internship.
Okay. Makes sense.
The reason being I did the J-term versus the regular fall term. And just if you're not aware, the J-term is a program that starts in January. It goes through the summer and finishes in May of next year. So
right.
You still do a traditional two-year MBA, but you do your second semester during the summer where fall students do their summer internship.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I chose that program in particular was because, one, I wanted to get to the program quicker, and two, I knew I wanted to go back to investing. I was not looking for a career change.
And that's exactly that's the profile that the J-term is for.
Yes, it's for those types of students.
Perfect.
And for students who want to do like entrepreneurship or something. However, I did decide in the fall to do a part-time internship, and I'm currently working at a private equity firm that does business services and software investments because I wanted to get exposure to those industries. I didn't have a lot of exposure to that prior to school. So this was a great way to kind of take advantage again of being in the city, going in a couple of days a week and being able to work there it's almost been like another class for me. And it's been really, really helpful in getting exposure to those industries and kind of getting me plugged into the deal world again.
Right. And is this like a class for you? Is it, you know, is it a job? I mean, is it both? Is it?
Yeah, it's treated as a job. So it's not, I don't get credit for it. But the way I'm viewing it as I'm viewing it as another class on my schedule. So I treat it like a learning experience. I go in, I work on new deals, new companies, new sectors. So for me, it's just, it's that continuation of personal development and learning And being able to do that, being able to learn something in school and then apply it in my internship, it's just been really, really valuable.
I'm sure it reinforces everything you're learning and provides your employer with value. And then I think not all MBA programs offer in class or, you know, in semester internships. It's one of the, it's not unique to Columbia. There are some other programs that do, but it is one of the distinctive features. And of course, everything you're saying, what I'm finding interesting is that everything you're saying really fits with Columbia's branding, you know, at the very center of business, the idea of access, both to practitioners and thought leaders, you know, the access to New York City and all the opportunities there. And again, from my perspective as a consultant, it's not always is the branding that clear or is the branding that consistently realized, let's put it that way.
Right.
So that's just kind of a, again, from my perspective, that's one thing that I'm finding rather interesting in the conversation. What are your plans for the future?
Yeah, so, you know, I want to go back into the private investment world, you know, hopefully go back now with a different perspective and a more solid toolkit. Potentially looking to focus on security and defense, you know, those are my passions.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't plan to rejoin the NYPD in the future. I feel like I was able to make a day-to-day impact by being out on the street in uniform. And now I'm really looking just to make a longer term impact, to invest in companies that are kind of fighting terrorism, you know, that are focusing on cybersecurity, and kind of helping to fuel their growth and their financing needs are what I'm really focused on going forward. So that's what I'd like to do.
It's a different kind of contribution. You have any tips for MBA applicants?
Yeah, you know, I'd say the most valuable thing I did was visiting campus and talking to students. You know, there's just no substitute for that. And every school is different. I would say if you have the opportunity, visit campus, talk to students. It helps you, first of all, you know, determine whether or not you actually want to apply and whether or not you could see yourself at that school, because it is a major investment. Mm-hmm. And two, it helps you when you think about your essays and why you want to go to a particular school. So I would highly, highly recommend that for anyone thinking of doing a full-time MBA program.
I completely agree with you. And one of the things you said earlier in our conversation was that you also talked to people senior to you about what they would value. I'm not arguing with you. I'd like to add that as a tip or a suggestion that should come out of this podcast for MBA applicants. I think it's really important that you did that. You said you found it helpful, and I think for those people considering the investment and wanting to maximize it.
Exactly.
That's a really good point. And I completely agree that visiting schools and talking to current students is an excellent idea. Is there anything you would have liked me to ask you?
You know, there's nothing in particular. The one thing I will just emphasize is that I'll say even students or prospective students with more traditional backgrounds can get a lot of value from an MBA. And I think, you know, it's not for everybody. But I think a lot of students write themselves off because they think that, oh, I have done undergrad business. I, you know, worked in finance or consulting or what have you. And, you know, I won't really learn anything. I'll say visit the schools, talk to the students. Now you'll be surprised at, you know, you might be surprised at what you find, and it might be really appealing. And I know for me, having worked in finance for several years prior to school, I'm going to go back with a completely changed and different perspective. And I'm really happy with my decision to go and get my MBA.
And are you very happy that you got it at Columbia?
Very happy. It was my ideal scenario, you know, being in New York and having finance focused program was what I wanted. So it worked out well.
Great. Nick, this has been absolutely delightful and very informative. I think we're just about finished, and I really want to thank you for joining me and for your time today.
Of course. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Listener, thank you too for joining Nick Kumar and me for Mission Straight Talk's 287th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, I have a favor to ask. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk. And as a reminder, you can access our Get Accepted to Columbia Business School on-demand webinar by clicking on the link in our show notes to the webinar. The show notes are at www.accepted.com/287. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.